the anniversaries of the Great War have been marked over the last few years, and in Australia they've been marked musically as part of this ambitious tribute, The Flowers of War. Chris Latham is its artistic director, and The Digger's Requiem is its climax. It's a multi-movement work, as you would expect from a requiem. It includes trumpet, soprano, mezzo-soprano, accordion, bagpipes, piano, choir and orchestra, and its Australian premiere is next month. It's the work of a number of composers, most of them living, one of them Frederick Septimus Kelly, of course, a composer who himself died during the Great War. And we will talk in a moment to Chris Latham about this project. But let's listen to the way that The Digger's Requiem begins. It's an overture, and it's by Elena Katz-Chernin. Well, that's music by Elena Katz-Chernin, and we heard part of the overture for this work, Digger's Requiem. It's played by the Orchestre de Picardie and the Jena Philharmonic together, conducted by Chris Latham. It's all part of this long-running programme called The Flowers of War, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Chris back to the show. Hello, Chris.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you, Andy.
Let's talk about what we've just heard, because it says here, arranged Latham, and I wondered about your role in that and what in fact it was that you arranged. It's called The Silent Field.
Well, The Silent Field is a piece that stands in for any battlefield, so it can be a piece that's just played that talks about the aftermath, the sense of loss, what's occurred there. My uncle told me about when I was a boy, he had seen an exhibition of photos by a Swiss photographer of orchards that had all been battlefields in the Middle Ages, and he couldn't quite figure out why they were so disconcerting. He didn't find out that they were battlefields until later. And there was something about that I wanted to capture, this idea that it could be any field, but what had happened there was quite traumatic, and I wanted a piece that had this very deep resonance. And Elena had written a piece called Blue Silence, which I'd always been very taken by. And I just thought it would be a perfect piece for this occasion. So we brought that piece into The Digger's Requiem.
So some of the pieces in Digger's Requiem, some of the pieces that make up The Digger's Requiem are specially composed, and some of them are, you've pulled them in from other places.
Yeah, we started in 2014. I was very drawn to this piece by Nigel Westlake called The Glass Soldier.
Mm, yeah, we talked about that, I think, at the time.
Yeah, and it was a piece that I thought was really powerful. And I realised very quickly that could become the spine of a much larger work. So there was already five movements that we kind of identified as being, okay, we could build a Digger's Requiem around those. And then we basically assembled it by, I think we commissioned eight works and then the rest of sort of objects either from the period, the Handel work that we opened with the Dead March from Saul as a piece that was played at military funerals around the time of the First World War. And the Frederick Septimus Kelly piece was written during the First World War, 2 weeks before his death. So there are these sort of found objects in a way that we've embedded into the piece. There's also a piece that was played by the Australian band when they retook Bapaume, and that is then inserted into one of the movements of The Glass Soldier. It quite seamlessly fits, actually. But that's actually a piece that was played. There's a very famous photograph of the band entering the town of Bapaume playing that piece, the Victoria March.
Let's talk about, before we talk a bit more about the Requiem itself, let's talk about the Flowers of War project in general, for people who have missed our previous conversations on this topic. What is it and how did it come about?
Well, I think it's probably the culmination of many threads in my life coming together. I had grown up in a family that had a lot of exposure to war. My grandmother had been a nurse. My grandfather and great uncle had served in Palestine in the First World War. My great uncle was a pianist and a composer who was shot in the shoulder and became a musicologist because he couldn't play the piano after that. My other grandfather served in the Second World War with the Free French Navy and got the Légion d'honneur, which is like the Victoria Cross. And so that mythology was very strong in my family, but also the damage that had occurred, because my French grandfather was quite different after the war, and he wasn't as sociable. You know, like many of us know this archetype, the grumpy old man. And I'm finding out as I go in life, most of those grumpy old men were veterans. Mm. And so I've always had this very strong interest in the subject. And when I was a kid, I was also very affected by propaganda. Like, we used to play with soldiers and watch war movies. I'm typical of my generation. I'm 50 now. But that was cheap TV and entertainment in the 1960s when we were growing up. And I didn't realise that had actually made quite a profound subconscious impression on me. And so I didn't relate to Germans very positively, even though I'd spent my life learning German music. And it really was only as an adult that I uncovered that. And I thought, you know, we all lost and we all suffered. And it's, you know, 100 years later, we're now trying to make peace in the world. And I wanted to find a way to use music, which was a universal language, to be able to express that for all of those cultures. And a lot of the work I did in the Flowers of War was identifying German composers, French composers, Belgian composers, British composers, New Zealand, Australian, all the composers I could basically identify who died in the war, who had real talent, and play their works, find their works, arrange their works so that they could be shown and remembered, and in a way be advocates for peace.
But notwithstanding the Frederick Septimus Kelly music in Digger's Requiem, this is preponderantly the work of living composers. And your job was, as overseer, must have been quite an interesting one. I mean, it's in the nature of these projects that they're a bit uneven, of course, if you've got a whole bunch of different composers writing different bits. So how did you supervise things, and how did you try to make the thing as seamless as possible where it needed to be seamless?
That was a challenge when we made the Gallipoli Symphony, that there had been no previous examples of a multi-author work that was, you know, strong and valid. And what we did in the Gallipoli Symphony was we rewrote them all consecutively, so everybody knew what was coming beforehand. And I spent a lot of time graphing it, so I would have these shapes of dramatic tension, and I would give each piece a little wedge, each composer a little wedge of that shape, and I'd say, this is your bit to write. And I think after 10 years of working on the Gallipoli Symphony, I got very comfortable with that idea. Also, a lot of the composers who worked on the Gallipoli Symphony wrote the Digger's Requiem as well. So we developed a shorthand. And I think also people began to trust that I would actually say, look, I think I need this slightly shorter and this slightly longer. And so we worked a lot on proportions, and particularly on the dramatic arc.
The composers, we've heard Elena Kaschernin's music, Richard Mills, Graham Kerner, Ross Edwards, Andrew Schultz. And we're going to hear now some music by Nigel Westlake. And maybe you could tell us about this. We're going to listen to some fast music, some very active music from the middle of the Dies Irae section of the Requiem. Tell us the background to this.
Well, Nigel wrote this amazing piece that was commissioned by Don Farrens. It's called The Glass Soldier Suite. There was a play, The Glass Soldier, and there's now a book, The Glass Soldier.
This is Hanny Rayson, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's about Nelson Ferguson, who was a trumpeter and a painter who went to serve as a stretcher bearer on the Western Front. At the Battle of Villers-Bretonneux, he went into a trench filled with gas, and his corneas were very badly burnt, and he was blinded. And he went back to try to teach painting as an invalid and realised after a while that wasn't going to work. So he set up a glass workshop and made stained glass windows in his backyard with his sons. They would do the coloured work, and he would do the form work, which he could sort of see enough of. And then at the end of his life, the Department of Veteran Affairs approved him for experimental surgery, and they replaced his corneas, and he was able to see all the stained glass windows he made. And I thought it was a really powerful idea about healing, that this is something that's deeply interesting to me because my father was a doctor, and I always thought that in a way what I wanted to do with music was to find ways that music could heal. And the greatest trauma I know of is the Great War. It's this appalling sadness that hardly was spoken about at the time. People wanted to move on very quickly. And so it became submerged like an abscess. And I think the idea of the piece is that it should be lanced, and that grief should be able to be let loose, and catharsis should occur, and people should be able to weep and somehow feel that they've expressed that sadness for that member of their family who is no longer with us. And that's why I made the work. That's why we all made the work, is really as a gift to all Australians who lost someone. And generally the way we talk about those people who are lost is, yes, he died in France, and there's not a lot more that people know than that. And so this is about trying to bring specificity to that loss and to give expression to it. The piece we're about to hear is the absolute depiction of the horror of war. I think it's an amazingly powerful piece of writing.
This is The Age of Destruction, music by Nigel Westlake. Music by Nigel Westlake. That's part of The Age of Destruction, which is the Dies Irae section of Digger's Requiem, and that recording made in France by the Orchestre de Picardie with the Jena Philharmonic, conducted by Chris Latham, who is the mastermind behind Digger's Requiem. I think that's probably an appropriate term under the circumstances, Chris. Let's talk a little bit more about the idea of the Requiem itself. Is this the obvious precursor as Benjamin Britten's War Requiem? Was that the precursor in your mind too?
Well, I'd have to say that what I intended was to replace that work, and that's not to negate the work. It's an amazing piece. It's one of Benjamin Britten's great masterworks. But I thought we had got to the point of cultural maturity where we should have our own. So I approached the Australian War Memorial and the Department of Veteran Affairs for the commissioning money, and we made it. And it was very much to make something that would sit equally in the sacred world and the secular world. So you can go and hear this as a requiem, and it has all the movements of a requiem you would expect. Or you can go and hear it as a like a memory space or a place where you would contemplate the events of the past and all of the movements of describing battles that we fought in, many of which are not terribly well known and are often very terrible affairs. So it joins also with all the paintings that come from the Australian War Memorial Collection and other memorial collections around the world that actually show the specific battles. So in a way, you could start from nothing, knowing nothing, and come to the concert and you would walk out with a deep appreciation of exactly what they did. And I found that that was actually a really interesting thing to do because they had commissioned this extensive visual record, and this really is to give the emotional context to those paintings, which sometimes, if you don't know the context, you could assume were just a landscape painting.
Yes, that's exactly. That's right, all the bleak landscapes. The actual Australian premiere of the complete work is happening on the 6th of October in Canberra, but there are performances this coming week of the brass version. This is the whole work arranged for brass.
Yes, I only finished it, I've got to say, last night, so I am exhausted from the process, but I've been grateful and glad to do it. The idea was always to be able to give something to the military bands to be able to play, and also all civilian brass bands, so that they would have a version of the piece that they could play for free, and the rights in the performing rights have been bought out in the commissioning process so that the brass bands can use these for free in non-commercial commemorative contexts. I thought it was very important to establish a kind of a repertoire that could be played that was first rate. And so there's a civilian context, obviously, with an orchestral format, and then there's the military context with the brass bands. And these concerts, which will occur on Wednesday in St Paul's Cathedral, Melbourne, and Thursday in Sydney in Pitt Street Uniting Church near Town Hall, are very meaningful to me because they're free, they're democratic, they've been paid for by the Australian Defence Force. And this is a way that essentially I'm looking to be able to move into the military world of music, and also the military are moving into the civilian world of music because we're engaging military musicians to play in the band as well as civilians, and also there is military musicians playing in the October 6th concert. It's always been something I've known that the military actually hires more people than any other organisation in Australia. This is more musicians. And so I wanted to honour them because they're the same students at the conservatory level. They then get a job either on the civilian side or the military side, and then they don't engage very much with each other. And so this was always designed to make a bridge.
To bring them back together. Talking of bringing people together, when we've been listening to the music played by a French and German orchestra, or orchestral players coming together, and also with Australian soloists. This was the performance you conducted in France earlier in the year. This performance that you're conducting in October in Canberra, is the French and German involvement in this as well?
Yes, so I've identified all Australians that have German and French backgrounds.
You mean musicians?
Yes, correct. Oh, sorry, my mistake. So I'm half French. Véronique Serret is half French. There's enormous amounts of Australian musicians who are trained in Germany. So we actually have a lot of Australian musicians who are culturally fluent. They speak fluent German, and they make up a large amount of the orchestra. Elena Katz-Chernin has a strong connection, obviously, to Germany. Andrew Schultz is coming from a German-Australian background, as is Graham Koerner. So there was conscious intent to embed French, German and Australians in the project and on a number of levels.
And the idea of doing that, which again is something that this has in common with Britten's War Requiem, the idea was to make it less nationalistic?
Correct. I wanted to make the point that we all lost. We all lost terribly. you know, the impacts culturally, I could go on and on about this, but it's very significant. The explosion of German painting before the First World War was enormously impressive, with huge amounts of colour. All those painters basically get killed or highly traumatised, and that ends. German painting is never colourful again. And this happens in many, many different cultures. French musical impressionism and visual impressionism gets killed off. We lose Kelly, who would have been a significant figure in our culture. New Zealand loses its great composer, as does Portugal. We lose painters like Klimt in Austria, one of the great living painters at the time. It's just, it seems to be a big watershed, and there's an enormously high price to pay. And partially, music gets pushed into modernism, and there's a whole bunch of issues around that. But one of the things I just always was very surprised by is that we were very unconscious of why these events had happened. And I actually wanted to uncover that. That was one of the motivations for doing the Flowers of War, is to really come to terms with the nature of the trauma that had embedded itself into the art forms.
This work has its climax in the Lux Aeterna by Ross Edwards, and I assume this was your idea to use, yes, John Grant's Lament for the Pipers Who Fell in the Great War, and it's very powerful indeed. Perhaps you could talk about this, because we'll listen to it to end.
Well, I found it in a book called The Pipes of War, which literally was all of the works written by pipers in the First World War, many of whom were killed. There's about 1,000 pipers killed in the First World War, pipers and drummers. So it's a significant amount. They're in all the Commonwealth armies. We have a pipe band in the Australian Army. And
I think that they're up the front.
Yeah,
it's no wonder they die, because they're leading the troops.
They had to eventually say, okay, they can't do that anymore, because the losses had become unsustainable. But they were very brave, and, you know, there's numerous people you can talk about, people who won the Victoria Cross, things like that, for their bravery. But this piece was always very striking to me. It was completely unknown. I got a pipes player when we were touring in the Somme to actually record it in the Pozier Church on the centenary, and I spent about 3 years coming to terms with it, and it's almost alien in that it is ancient sounding. It sounds like it could have been written 1,000 years ago, and it's the traditional pibroch, which is the, in a way, the period instrument movement inside piping has kind of gone back to its roots, and the roots are these very archaic laments. This is an example of that. And we use it as a cantus firmus. Ross then weaves around this cantus firmus that repeats over and over again, this orchestral choral texture soloists, and finally the ring of the 62,000 bells, which is the idea is to give a bell stroke for every Australian that died in the First World War.
And how did you achieve 62,000 bells, Chris?
Well, that was very complicated. I have to say, we struggled with that for a good 3 months. I lost most of my summer to finding the solution of that. In the end, we just overlaid and overlaid and overlaid lots and lots of recordings, and it has a very beautiful quality. It will actually be used as a standalone piece in an installation at the War Memorial. They're putting out 62,000 poppies, and at the end of the music that's being played at that time is this recording. And one of the things that's quite lovely about it is it became very restful, and the bells no longer had that implication of the, you know, the death bell, but more like this joyous and quite exuberantly happy transformation. So I liked the way it changed everything. It became more and more uplifting and filled with light.
And that's what comes at the climax of this movement, after Ross Edwards' music for voices and orchestra has built and built and built. It suddenly cuts out, as does at last the pipes, and then we hear the bells. Chris, thank you very much indeed for talking to me on The Music Show about your project, The Flowers of War. Congratulations on it. And this, as I mentioned, is the culmination of it, Digger's Requiem. Thanks very much, Chris.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Andy.
The Digger's Requiem will have its Australian premiere on the 6th of October at Llewellyn Hall at the Australian National University in Canberra. But before that, this coming week, there are performances with brass
at St Paul's Cathedral, Melbourne on Wednesday, and Pitt Street Uniting Church in Sydney on Thursday. And you'll find the full details of these concerts on the Music Show's website. And while you're there, of course, you can catch anything that you've missed on the Music Show, including perhaps the earlier interview with James Morrison and Zhang Meng about their concert Two World Harmonies. And you can listen to all of this at any time via the ABC Listen app.